Welcome to Deep Talk, the podcast for advanced English learners who are looking to explore something a little bit deeper. My name's Rhiannon and I'm an English coach. Each week I invite a different guest onto the show and they choose a text or video they've really loved recently. Together we talk about the ideas and we invite you to join in on the Deep Talkers Facebook group. You'll find the links to the text we discuss in the description to this podcast, along with all the links to get involved. Welcome to episode 16 and our Halloween special. Now, before we begin, Halloween is not my festival. I can't remember the last time I celebrated. It almost has no place in my concept of the year. But my guest, Claire, is the complete opposite. And as soon as she suggested our topic for this week's discussion, I knew I would have to make this a Halloween special. Claire is Halloween obsessed. If you follow her Instagram account for her company, The Edinburgh Experience, you will get to see her Halloween themed nails, which are absolutely stunning. Go check them out, if nothing else. And to show just how into Halloween and Halloween obsessed she is, my partner invited her to a party this weekend that she is throwing, actually to celebrate me reaching 100k followers on Instagram, which is really kind. And Claire's first comment was, "But it's Halloween weekend. Is this a Halloween party?" My partner had to be like, "No, we're celebrating Rhiannon's success. Calm down with the Halloween." But regardless, it's so great to have Claire with us in this episode. She has picked the theme of witches. And as she explains so wonderfully at the beginning of this conversation, there are three main sides to witchcraft, two of which I think we're more familiar with, and one which almost never crosses our minds. So there is, of course, the aesthetic side of witchcraft, the kind of movies and the TV shows, the books about magic, the clothes and the fashions which follow a kind of witchy look. Then we have the more spiritual side of things, so that might be Wiccans, folklore, witchcraft as a kind of connection to the spirit world, to knowledge. And then, and what we spend the majority of our conversation discussing today, there's the historical miscarriage of justice, which saw thousands upon thousands of mostly women executed for the bogus charge of witchcraft, and which tragically still sees women executed today in many parts of the world. So I hope you enjoy this chat with Claire. It is serious, but there is laughter in there as well. And as always, I want to know your thoughts. So be sure to join our Deep Talkers community. This is the private members Facebook group where you can catch sneak peeks of the topic before the episode drops, chat with other listeners about the episode, and it's also just a space to be generally geeky and share things that you're enjoying reading and listening to at the moment. You can find the link to join in the episode description. For now though, enjoy this chat with Claire. So today I'm talking to Claire. Claire runs an incredible business based here in Scotland called The Edinburgh Experience. I know exactly how great it is because I worked there for 5 years before setting up my own business. She specialises in cultural immersion programmes, helping you develop your language skills while learning more about Scottish history and culture. You can find her on Instagram and Facebook and I'll pop her handle in the episode description. In her spare time, Claire loves reading, travelling, yoga and music. Today we are talking about the witch trials, which took place across Europe between the 16th and 18th centuries, and their repercussions today, and she's brought two awesome articles for us to discuss. The first is from The Observer, "Why the Witch Hunt Victims of Early Modern Britain Have Come Back to Haunt Us," and the second is from Lit Hub, "A Brief History of Calling Women Witches." So Claire, first of all, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
It's my honour to have been invited. Thank you so much for having me.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. I just want to take a little moment to say how proud I am of you, because I think what you're doing is just amazing. And it's just so exciting to see you grow the way that you're growing.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
And your business grow. It's wonderful.
Thank you so much. And how, I mean, proud probably feels the wrong way, because I was your employee, but I'm so excited about the projects that you've got going, and we'll definitely take a minute at the end of this conversation to dive in, because I'm super excited about what I see going on over at the Edinburgh Experience.
Oh, thank you.
Look at us being awesome, successful women. We would probably have been burnt at the stake. And on that note,
I am 100% sure that I wouldn't have lasted. Like that's yeah.
That exactly.
Accepted.
On that note, the topic this week is witchcraft, very well timed with Halloween just around the corner. What is this topic all about?
Well, it's about a lot of things. And I think part of the problem is that normally it's actually put in one box, but it's a lot more complex than it tends to be. So what I wanted to talk about, which is we have the kind of historical miscarriage of justice aspect of it, of people who were accused and lost their lives for something which literally could not have happened. We have the kind of view of how it shaped really a lot of modern feminism and a lot of, I think, female identity nowadays. And then also, yeah, the kind of encouraging aesthetical side of it. Aesthetical, is that a word? Aesthetic side? It's also very popular, right? So in Edinburgh at the moment, we have witches' markets. They take place every month and they are literal. So like people queue to get into them because they're so popular. So there's a lot of interesting aspects about the kind of image of what witches are, how all of this is basically tied up in myth, but how all of it has an impact on, I think, modern day culture, modern identity, and still also has a huge impact on real people's lives, because tragically there are still people around the world being accused of witchcraft and losing their lives because of it. So a lot of different things.
Why don't we start with that miscarriage of justice side? Because I think that's probably the side people are least familiar with. And I know mainly from your Facebook posts that there is a campaign in Scotland to get women exonerated. Is that right?
To get women pardoned, that's right. So in Scotland, we have the Witches of Scotland campaign, two incredible women who are carrying this. Please go check them out after listening to see all the things they've done. They're most social media. They've also got a really great podcast too, actually. So this started, I think probably around 2016, there was a survey of the witchcraft, the people who had been accused of witches in Scotland, that was done at Edinburgh University. And there's a map, you can find it online. It's astounding because it really humanises this miscarriage of justice that happened. So Scotland was one of the most prolific places for the execution of witches. I'm saying this in inverted commas because, of course, they weren't actually witches. So we don't have the exact numbers. It's estimated that between 1563 and 1736, 3,800 Scots were accused.
Wow.
Estimated around 84% of those were women. And two-thirds of those people, so that's around 2,148 women, 410 men, were executed as well. So, yeah, it's really shocking. It's absolutely shocking. And the darker, even darker side to that is that basically all of these were, most or all of these confessions were achieved by torture, really quite horrific torture, and that nothing has been done about it, right? So that's what's happening in Scotland now, is that they're leading this campaign for various things. So they were asking for an apology from the Scottish government, a national monument to those who were accused and executed, and finally a pardon, a posthumous pardon for everyone who was involved. Wow. So we got the apology this year on International Women's Day.
Fantastic.
The First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, apologised in the Scottish Parliament, and that launched a consultation within the Scottish Parliament to see if there was enough interest for there to be a bill to be passed for there to be an official pardon. So that's the stage that they've now closed the consultation, and that's the next stage in this journey.
Excellent.
So that's what's happening in Scotland, and I just think it's very interesting about what happened in Scotland and how little of it is really known. Before we were talking, remember I just mentioned that basically if you do a tour in Edinburgh, you will be told that in the area which is now Princess Street Gardens, which used to be a loch, we say in Scotland, or a lake, called the Norloch, everybody is told that that's where witches were thrown off the castle to test if they were witches.
Yeah.
That never happened in Scotland. Witches were not burned alive either. That's a myth that didn't happen. They were hanged or strangled first, or garrotted, and then they were burned alive.
Bloody hell.
So that their body wouldn't, they couldn't get their body to come back, so the body could be reanimated, you know. There's so much myth surrounding it. We don't really have facts about it. And ultimately, they were people, you know, they were people.
This is the thing that I think really needs to be kind of spelt out, because we're talking about miscarriage of justice. But for any listeners who took as long as I did to kind of twig what was going on, the reason that this is a miscarriage of justice is that witchcraft isn't real. They were accused of a crime that isn't a thing.
Exactly.
and that's where this comes from. And it really takes, I was saying this, you know, before we started recording, it takes so much concentration for me to remember that these people who died were not witches. They were not magical. They didn't have magic powers. They weren't cursing their neighbor's well water or whatever it was that they were accused of. They were just people who, for whatever reason, maybe attracted attention, or, I mean, they literally could have been anything. As you say, so many of these accusations came from torture. It would have just been people saying, like, she did it, or he did it, because I need you to stop doing this.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It would just get to a point that people were so horrifically tortured that they just started saying names. The witch trials in Scotland, they all kicked off with King James VI of Scotland, who'd gone to Denmark to pick up his new bride, had terrible storms on the way there, and he actually kind of found out about witchcraft in the Danish court, and they accused some, or found witches, again, inverted commas. Just imagine every time I say witches, I'm doing inverted commas here. So he was taken to the Danish court. In the Danish court, they got these witches, and that's kind of how King James VI was interested in witches. So the idea of a witch always existed in Scottish kind of lore. It existed in this grey area, right? So you, like, within Scotland, you had the idea of folk beliefs and you had religion, and they just kind of coexisted quite well. The change began with the Scottish Witchcraft Act in 1563, and the key thing about that was that it permitted torture to get a confession.
Wow.
But even then, it didn't really kick off until the 1590s. And that was when King James VI sort of started to learn about witches in the Danish court, came back, had another terrible storm, and it could have all just finished there, but it didn't. So there was a man in East Lothian called David Seaton, and he decided that his servant, Gaelus Duncan, was behaving very suspiciously, thought that she was a witch, decided to torture her. And that was the start of the confessions of what became called the North Berwick Witch Hunt.
Yeah.
And that kicked off a whole sequence of events, and just Gaelus there went on through her torture and subsequent tortures, over 100 names were given.
Wow.
Which kind of really stoked the fire.
Yeah.
But also, crucially, the King of Scotland basically gave his assent to this. So he really believed it. The King of Scotland wrote a book called Demonology, which was a kind of handbook on how to sort of hunt witches and stuff. And so it was almost like your duty as a good citizen, you know,
to be on the lookout for these signs.
Yeah,
and
to be part of this. Because if you weren't with him, you were against him, right?
Absolutely.
And King James VI of Scotland would go on to become King James I of England. And that's what brought the witch hunts to England too. So it's kind of all connected around this one guy.
Yeah. But that's a really interesting point that you raise as well, is that this wasn't, at least for the most part, this wasn't malicious in the sense of, I really hate women and I'm looking for some kind of way to pretend I don't. For the most part, it seems that this tied in with the mythology of the time, the understanding of the time, the religion of the time. people believed this stuff.
Yeah, a lot of things came together at the right time, not for the people obviously who were executed, but so really all of this goes back to 1487. A German priest called Heinrich Kramer, he wrote something called the Malleus Maleficorum, and that was otherwise known as the Hammer of the Witches. So this was like his kind of little guidebook as to how to spot a witch, how you need to do it. But what that book stated that was different from the kind of folk belief
this is scientific,
absolutely. So the way that it was different was that it sold witches as the devil's handmaiden.
Right.
So before, that didn't really exist. I think a witch was more, you know, kind of with the spirit world, with that kind of other realm. Mm-hmm. But then with, of course, then you get into kind of the growing Calvinist, Lutheran, the Protestant movements of religion. And within that, this kind of heightened, you know, sort of fear of the devil. So that's where with the witch hunts in Scotland, I think, you know, we need to give a bit of a break to those who were accusing, because they were genuinely terrified that this was real and that the devil was coming and that, you know, the day of reckoning wasn't far away, and that they were, you know, God's servants and they had to kind of get rid of that. So there's a side to all of this about the witch trials for the people who were living it and were going through it, that they did believe that. Within that, I mean, I don't think you can necessarily take misogyny out of that because of the way the world worked. You know, it was a very like the Scottish Protestant Reformation was very misogynist.
Oh, yeah.
Totally, you know, it was kind of a sort of Taliban state essentially in Scotland. People had to go on Sunday. You had to go to church two or three times. You'd be fined if you weren't attending. It was not, you know, a relaxed or particularly exciting, fun place to be in. Anyway, so you know, there was all of that that was, of course, going on. And for sure, I'm sure there was elements of people having self-interest. So David Seaton, who sort of started everything as a good example, some people suggest that the reason that he accused Gaylis Duncan was because he wanted her to name his sister-in-law.
Wow.
And his sister-in-law had inherited property. He thought he was the one that should have got that money. And Gaylis did name her. And she was executed, right? Sidelined to the...
But didn't you say she named like 100 people by the end?
She did. But she named... So she named... Well, I don't know if Gaylis would have named 100, but 100 women were named in all of this. But one of the ones that she'd named was Euphemina. And she, though, was a very clever lady. And David Seaton still didn't see the money even after she was executed because she made sure that it got passed down to her daughters. But... Wow. Yeah, it's, you know, so there's of course self-interest, I think, in that too. But it's not as simple as most tour guides will tell you, basically. It wasn't a case of, you know, oh, she's got red hair, she's a witch.
Yeah.
There was a lot of stuff going on. And just the kind of torture they used, right? So the most common form of torture, which I keep telling everyone, because I do a lot of work about being a new parent and things too, as I tell this constantly to new parents, the most common form of torture and most effective form of torture for those accused of witchcraft in Scotland was sleep deprivation.
Yeah.
You know, and they would just end up hallucinating stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, it was, you know, so all of this kind of stuff would just get people get named, devils would appear, you'd be flying on broomsticks, whatever.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you were just so exhausted that you started to imagine things that it was real.
Enjoying this conversation? Has it sparked some interesting thoughts? Wish you had a space to get involved? You know what I'm going to say. Deep Talkers Facebook group is open. We are talking about the podcast, getting sneak peeks of the next episode's topics, and sharing all the other interesting stuff we've been reading and listening to recently. Sign up at the link in this episode description. It's interesting you brought up tour guides just then, because to anyone who hasn't visited Scotland, we like a tour guide. And so much of Scottish history, you know, go to a different cities and you'll get different stories, and different kind of emphasis. Maybe it'll be an emphasis on the industry of the area or the food of the area, but a lot of tours based in Scotland are historical. And I, having been an English teacher like you in the city for a long time, are very familiar with these tours. And yeah, we hear this mythology that is presented as history so often. Mm-hmm. And it's not just Scottish history and it's not just these tour guides. We have like this perception in Britain that unless you are an actual medieval historian who does look at manuscripts and facts, we have this perception of history that involves things like, you know, King Arthur and the Round Table, and you've got a sword in the stone, and you've got some witch living in a lake, and much like it takes some concentration to remember that these weren't actually witches, it takes a lot of concentration for me to remember that that actually isn't history. That's just, there's, you know, we actually didn't have like dragons flying around. And yet so much of our kind of stories about ourselves are based in what is essentially mythology. So when it comes to then thinking about, as you say, like a miscarriage of justice, which feels like a very 20th, 21st century phrase, to then apply that to something where we all, unless we kind of think about it, have a very blurry vision of what, like, were the people in the 15th century or 16th century actually people? Like, it doesn't seem very connected to now. I just think that I'm struggling to articulate the blurriness in my mind, because I like to think this is a universal way of thinking about history, and I'm aware that I might just be revealing the fact that I've never critically thought about anything I've read in my life.
I think that's the problem of how history is taught, right? I like that you use the word stories, because for me, ultimately, and this is one of the reasons I love history so much, is it is stories. It's just telling stories to each other, right? That's what history is. And, you know, hopefully we can get more sophisticated stories out of that. And we can begin to question those stories and make them a bit more complex. And from those stories, you get your own story. That's why I think history is so important. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think, you know, we all do need to look at it critically. I think that the very often, because what is recorded in history is like the big things, like maybe in you know, you took the example of King Arthur and the mythology surrounding that. But anything really that happens in history, it's not the little people that are remembered. It's not, you know, all of those numbers of the population that had lives and lived and everything else. We don't remember that. When we talk about fantastic wars or victories, we don't think about everyone that died or lost a child or, you know. I think history usually is dehumanized, actually. Quite often, probably to suit the narrative of whoever's in power at the time. That's one of the reasons I'm very passionate about the witch's pardon, is that I think it's not just about the witches. You know, it's kind of a wider message to that, is that we're forgetting about, in this case, and throughout a lot of other history, we're forgetting about women, right? And I know before anyone jumps on comments here, yes, there were men that were affected. I'm not taking that away from them. But even within that, you know, women in Scotland were not allowed to speak at their own trials.
Wow.
Whether it was witchcraft or anything else, they just weren't allowed to do that. Whereas men did have that. And also, witches were, like I said before, this connection with the devil. They were the devil's handmaidens, right? They didn't even have any agency as witches.
Right. It wasn't an incredible skill to have developed your magical ability over...
Exactly. If you were a wizard or something, like, you know, that kind of had more like, oh, okay, you're a wizard, a warlock, whatever, you know, that kind of suggested that you had done something yourself within that.
Right.
But with the witches, it was also this idea of not having agency.
Right. And just some vessel of the devil's power.
Yeah. And women are not recorded in history. In Edinburgh, there are more statues, named statues of animals, than named statues of women. Which I think's just
it's like one of those stats where you're like, there are more men named John who are CEOs of FTSE 500 companies than women. And you just hear these things and you're like, for fuck's sake. Like,
animals, like, I love dogs. Dogs are great, okay? They're very nice, but personally, I think there should be a statue. So this is totally off topic, but yeah, so if you're in Edinburgh, there's a very famous dog statue called Greyfriars Bobby, okay? And literally one block away, you have Edinburgh University, which is where the first woman to ever matriculate in an undergraduate course in a British university attended. Mm. And there's no statue for them. There's a tiny sign further up the road about them, which doesn't even celebrate them. It celebrates an event.
Right.
But yeah, we have this, like, on the tourist trail, you have to go and see this image of a dog.
Bloody dog.
And yeah, which, you know, like, and I'm sorry again to anyone who's a dog lover, like, they're fine, but you know, like, I do feel like 50% of the population should probably be more represented in a city than animals,
dogs.
So yeah. It's yeah, I think that everything about the witch's pardon, we were talking before we came on here about why does it matter, mm-hmm. right? Why do we need to talk about something it happened 400 years ago? Let's forget about it. I think it is important because, one, it's this idea of representation and recognition. So if you don't see yourself in the city that surrounds you, just think about all the things you could be if you saw the statues of women in medicine, if you saw the statues of, you know, of what women had achieved, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. As a woman, what that might inspire you to do. So that's the first thing, which I think representation is very important. The other for me is social justice. So in 2019, in the Scottish Parliament automatically pardoned any men who had convictions of being gay or bisexual, which is fantastic. In no way should that not have happened. And in 2020, they pardoned those who'd been arrested from the miner strikes in the 1980s, mm-hmm. in the UK. There was a huge miner strike, which again is fantastic. I think those are great moves, but they all predominantly affect men.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you can clear up a social injustice from 50 years ago, but you opt to forget about one which is 400 years old, which affected mainly women,
yeah,
that's sending out a message about who's important or who's valued in society. So that's another reason why I think it's important. And thirdly, it's still happening. It's not gone away. Mm-hmm. You know, and the UN, the statistics are from about 2018, I think, but the UN reported a rise in the last decade of worldwide of women being killed for witchcraft. It's increasing. It's not decreasing. Mm. You know, in Saudi Arabia, women are convicted in court. They have been convicted in court of this. In Nigeria, it's rising as well, significantly. Mm-hmm. India, it's also quite a common problem. So it's not like this doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
It is still existing. And by, you know, having Scotland denounce that and pardon, we're sending an important message that that's not okay, it's not acceptable. And Scotland's quite behind in this, by the way. There's lots of other places like Germany, they did it on a lot of regional levels, they did a lot of pardons. Catalonia last year, just 2022 in January, they also pardoned the witches. And the most famous witch hunts worldwide, right, which are from Salem,
yeah,
in the States. They've got a museum, they've got like the towns, they've got statues in the town. And that was only 25 people who died.
Right.
And of those 25 people, only 19 were actually executed. The other ones died in the prison because it was so bad. Mm-hmm. But compare that with, you know, the sort of around 2,300 people that were executed in Scotland. To not recognise that, I think, is really criminal. So that's why I think it's a wider context, yeah. You know, in this case, we're talking about witches, but we could be talking about, we're talking about people who were disenfranchised, who didn't have a voice, which, you know, still happens significantly today.
Something I would like to talk about before we finish is I guess from a personal perspective, I know you. I can see your incredible nails that you've got at the moment, which I think are quite witchy. I know that you know how you loved Halloween. I mean, you love Halloween, but you loved it when we worked together and you would decorate the classrooms. Like, you get really into, I guess, the more aesthetic side of magic and witchcraft. You say you're a child of the 90s when it was like all the rage. How do you reconcile the fact that, you know, we've been saying witches in inverted commas for the whole thing? You know, they weren't witches, they're women or people, you know, this is a miscarriage of justice. How do you reconcile that with, oh, but witches are really cool?
Well, because witches are really cool. I think
it right, well, that's that then.
Ties in. That's that. Like, I think I've just summed that up. No, but I think it ties in as well to, you know, you have, for me as well, the idea of witches is these shows in the 90s that you just referred to, they were all about young women having power.
Mm.
So, yeah, I don't know if your listeners have watched a show called, a film called The Craft from the 90s, but I think that's a great example of this idea of getting your power back, right? So mm-hmm. It's this group of four girls who are bullied, and suddenly, you know, they learn to be witches, and they're able to fulfill all the things that they want in their life. So I think, and a lot of the other shows kind of around that, mm-hmm. like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, yeah. or Charmed, or Sabrina the Teenage Witch, you know, it was, I think that was definitely appealing for me. But I think a lot of it's also about kind of reclaiming the word, because for me now, witch is like a really positive thing because of what I associate it with.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's kind of like having, trusting your inner self, trusting your inner voice. It's a lot about believing in yourself. It's kind of the things which are maybe traditionally not seen as okay for women to do, right? Like being outspoken, being knowledgeable, yeah. Taking decisions, you know, that kind of stuff. I think that also appeals a lot to me. And also I just really love the aesthetic. I just love it. I love that, but that's like the same way that I love anything with a dragon in it. You know, like really, I'm just kind of think, especially after the last 2 years, anything that involves escapism from reality is very appreciated.
Yeah. I think there's something, certainly when I was growing up, we talked about before, like reading like The Worst Witch, Mildred Hubble,
yeah.
and those, you know, those kind of characters, and then later it was Charmed. There was something really lovely about the idea that you had this like escape route of magic.
Exactly.
Like, well, exactly. If I get myself stuck in a bind, I'll just perform a spell and that'll get me out of it and I'll be fine.
That's fine. Or the same reason I love Narnia, it was like, I'll just open a door and get out of this shit. You know, like it was that kind of idea. So I think I still, there's a little part of me that still wants to really, really strongly believe that magic exists. and I'm not quite ready to give it up yet. So I think that's, you know, kind of why I love all of that too. That's, I think, maybe less to do with the concept of mm-hmm. kind of the witch, but and more related to that as well.
Yeah.
And I just kind of love the idea of the sort of fantasy world. In general.
Absolutely, me too.
But
me
I don't think they have to be mutually exclusive, right? So, you know, the same way that we know dragons didn't exist, but it's still really fun to imagine that they do. I think it's a case of educating yourself and knowing. For me, they're very different things, right? I think you have the miscarriage of justice about people who had nothing to do with witches, but then you have like the folk mythology, you have mm-hmm. the kind of idea of the other realminess of fairies, of banshees, of mythical creatures, which is really fun. And I love to kind of explore. So for me, those are two very different things. And I think, finally answering your question, that is how I can like juggle the two aesthetics, the two sides, because I don't see them as the same thing. I think they're quite separate.
Fantastic. Well, I have loved this, and I'm going to go off and read so much more about witches over the next couple of weeks.
if you want any novels, just hit me
up. Okay, all right.
I have like
everybody send Claire a DM. See what her recommendations are. Before we finish, I alluded to it at the beginning of the recording, but you do cultural immersion, Englishy mm-hmm. stuff here in Scotland. I know you have just launched a new project to do with history and tours and children. Mm-hmm. Can you just tell listeners, I know that loads of them are not going to be based in Edinburgh, but they might be visiting and they might want to get involved. What is it that you're doing at the moment?
So yeah, I'm focusing now. I still do some sort of online exam prep stuff, but now I'm mainly focused on cultural immersion. I'm very much wanting to move away from the idea, a bit like what you talk about, Rhiannon. You know, it's not this idea about getting better at English. It's not being a native speaker. It's not, you know, it's being a proficient, confident speaker. Mm-hmm. And I just think that in my own experience of learning languages, the best way to learn is if you connect with the culture and if you're you have a desire to do it, right? If you want to find out more about the culture, it inspires you, I think, to use the language. Mm-hmm. So for adults, I do cultural immersion courses in the summer. And the idea is that we basically do an entire week that we're together, visiting amazing places in Scotland, in Edinburgh, doing history, talk about history and literature, but also we do things like food tasting, drink tasting, going to folk music sessions. Cool. And discussions, and we all talk together and we have really great discussions about all these different aspects of Scottish culture, so you can really experience it and live it. And with the parents thing, that's a new one I'm doing now, not just for English language learners, it's for anyone really, for new parents to be able to do an activity which is for them, not just for the baby, which was my experience when I was a new mum. And we just did our first one last week, actually, and it was really great. And I met all of these amazing women. One of them, they were just so cool. Like, one of them was a rare book auctioneer.
Yeah,
that was her job. I was like, this is amazing.
That's so cool.
I want to know more about you. And yeah, we did a talk about Robert Louis Stevenson, a mini tour. We all went and had a coffee and we discussed it. And I'm very passionate about being able to create a community for new parents. Which is supportive because I think society's failing parents, basically. So it's really about taking culture as a cornerstone for learning and discussing and discovering and telling your story, right? So what we said before about stories. If you learn about someone else's story, I think it allows you to understand and express your own better.
Awesome. Thank you. I mean, thank you again for picking this topic, for joining us. I cannot wait to have you back to talk about being a new parent and the unfairness of that situation.
Oh, I would talk about that.
Have that chat next
especially, week. Especially for listeners, because I bet, yeah, I there's so much there about how it affects your ability to learn a language, which no one ever talks about. So I would 100% be down for that.
Yeah, we can bring that on for next year sometime, perhaps. But for now, it has been such a pleasure to chat to you, Claire. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on, Rhiannon. It's been an absolute pleasure too. And please, guys, if you're interested, check the Witches of Scotland campaign for more information.
Yes, I will try to remember to put the link in the description. Bye.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed that. My thanks once again to Claire for picking the topic and sharing it with us. You know what to do if you want to get involved. My Deep Talkers community is going to be free for another month or so. Then we're going to go paid. So jump in now, see what it's like before the paywall comes up. It's a great way to get involved with the podcast, to use your English, to meet folks from all around the world, and in a month's time, to chip in and contribute to the work that goes into producing this podcast. If you like Deep Talk and get something out of it and want to help me continue to make it, that small monthly contribution will be greatly appreciated by me. All that's left for me to say is Happy Halloween to all who celebrate. If you're looking for some more themed reading and listening, there's a bunch of resources in the episode description to keep you busy. For now though, many, many thanks for listening. I've been Rhiannon. This has been Deep Talk. Have a wonderful day.